From the pulpit of the Capital City Baptist Church, we present Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of Pastor Adam Thompson and the Capital City Baptist Church. I'd invite you to stay with us because at the end of the broadcast, we'll give you our contact information. And now with a message from the Word of God, here's Pastor Adam Thompson.
Tonight, Daniel chapter 1, we're going to start with Daniel and preach our way through the life of Daniel. What I don't want you to do, we're going to look at a lot of different aspects where Daniel set the example. And because you've read the book and heard a few messages on this man, I don't want you to think for a second that you're not going to be helped and too quickly tune out another message on Daniel, on the life of Daniel. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake to Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge and understanding in science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, in whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. The king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. I want you to think tonight about high impact living, because that's what we see in the life of Daniel. Daniel's been an example that's motivated literally millions of Christians for over 2,500 years. That's high impact. Can you imagine how many times this man has been preached on, his example used in family devotions, pulpits all across the world, Christian schools, reading and writing materials? This man is one of the few in the Bible that we see that God didn't highlight any defects or any flaws in his character, any of the sins that he committed. Now, we know he wasn't flawless, but he was a pretty fine example of what a Christian ought to be for an extended period of time. Now, it's one thing to be an example in your youth or in your middle age or in your old age, but he was an example under four different kings from the time he was 15 or 16 and carried off into captivity all the way till the time of his death. He was faithful in setting an example in crisis and out of crisis, in the midst of success. And here's what we've seen. Some people have appeared to be a good example until they hit the crisis. And others appeared to set a pretty good example until they became successful. And that success ruined them. We watch people that when they were poor, they set a pretty good example of a life of faith. But as soon as they had a little bit of money, we watched them as they deviated from Bible truths and really abandon the house of God, the work of God, in order to obtain greater riches. So here's what we see in Daniel. He wasn't any different before power or after power, before his ascension to being second in the kingdom or after that. And none of that mattered. His circumstance did not change who he was or what he was doing. He was always setting the example. He wasn't using anything as an excuse to do wrong. And you know the circumstances when he was taken captive. Israel was a disaster. That's why the Bible says that verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to come down and take these people captive because they were in idolatry. And if you read the book of Jeremiah, which parallels the day and age that we're living in, you'll see a nation that was wicked and wholly given to idolatry. And Daniel, in those days, in that time, maintained principles and taken captive. We see he's still sticking by those principles. Even when things got worse, 900 miles, he's carried away to the land of Shinar, which we know is Babylon. Here's what we get to thinking. Be careful. We get to thinking the problems are unique to us. And here's where our example wavers. And here's where people oftentimes, although we stand on principle, although we stand on this book, although we know what is right, what is wrong, sometimes we allow the circumstance to change our view and alter our behavior. Because we say, well, this really my excuse to do wrong, because if God was loving, if God was caring, if God was really paying attention, he'd help me out. He would answer that prayer. And I'm the only one. Folks, it doesn't matter what sickness you're dealing with. It doesn't matter how rare the disease is. It doesn't matter what's happening in your marriage or what your children are doing. You are not unique in the problems you're facing. Satan uses that and tells us this lie. Daniel could have sat back and said, not only was I living in a wicked country, not only were the people living idolatrous to such a manner that God allowed us to be taken captive, but now look, I'm taken from my family, and I'm put in the palace, and I got to go through 3 more years of training, and I know the purpose is to brainwash me, and none of that was used as an excuse. But too often as Christians, we use our unique set of circumstances as an excuse to stop living or stop setting an example. Pastor, you got to understand what I'm suffering. There's no way for a man humanly to understand what you're suffering. But there is a way to know the Bible principles don't change in the midst of craziness or chaos or suffering. So how do we arrive that... Here's really the question. How did Daniel rise above his circumstances? Now, here's what we're not going to do tonight. We're not going to explain all of his circumstances, because most of you are very familiar with the life of Daniel. If you go back and see Daniel as he's being reared in a very, very wicked time, and then the enemy comes in and he watches is tens of thousands of people are murdered. War is an ugly thing in this day and age. But back in the day, with the weapons of warfare and the means of fighting, war was an ugly, ugly thing. And to experience what he experienced and to see what he saw with his own eyes, the devastation, the hurt, the pain, the slaughter. We're talking about a heathen nation without God coming in and killing and plundering and raping and murdering. And Daniel saw that. Daniel now is being led away and being taken from his home and being taken from his country, being taken from his culture, never again to see his parents, never again to see his relatives. Now, those circumstances would make a person lose their mind. Here's where an example starts. Here's where setting a good example starts. Starts right here in the mind. And we know as soon as we lose our mind, we lose our testimony. So it doesn't matter how principled you are, how long you've been in church, or how much Bible you know. As long as Satan can get himself within the four walls of your head, he can get you to do something you would never do under normal circumstances. If he can get you to lose your mind, then you're in trouble. The battle's right here. The battle is for the stability of the mind. And we know there are a million factors when it comes to the mind. Health is a factor. Stress is a factor. Obligations are a factor. Tiredness is a factor. Confusion is a factor. Fear is a factor. And when someone loses their mind, it's never because of a single factor. It's not just because you were tired. It's not just because you were sick. It's not just because you were under stress. But at that perfect storm, that perfect moment, when all those factors combined and came together, caused you to react in a way that was very unchristlike. Now, let me ask you this. If you think about the life of Daniel, can you say in any way that over the course of your 30 or 40 or 50 years on this planet, you've ever had to deal with a set of circumstances anywhere similar to the set of circumstances Daniel was living at this moment. Oh, maybe you should have turned off the TV and you saw something you shouldn't have seen. But we're not talking about a single murder. We're talking about a city, a nation. Gentlemen, a city or a nation being destroyed and plundered. And he's watched it. Not saying goodbye to mom and dad. Not packing his bags. But being pulled away, permanently separated. So here's the question tonight. If he's going to set the example, and he did, his mind had to be controlled. This is all about a stable mind. And as soon as our mind becomes unstable, our testimony becomes unstable. As soon as our mind becomes unstable, and that's why Satan is after your mind. How many ever noticed that? If I could just keep my mind controlled. Now, we're talking about a stable mind. We're talking about three different things tonight that we're going to mention. Number one, it's about avoiding a breakdown. Now, we're not talking about going off to the mental ward of the hospital. We're not talking about the need for medication. We're not talking about psychiatric treatment. We're not talking about all the ways that they have to treat a crazy person in this day and age. How many of you thought, just with these kids, I'm on the verge of insanity? With the blessed mate that God has given me, with amazing responsibilities, with the boss that seems to know how to push every one of my buttons, I don't know if I can deal another day, another hour with the stress, with the mental stress that I'm having at this moment. And Daniel was in a situation, if anyone should have been pushed to the very limit, to the max of their mental and emotional capacity, it should have been Daniel. And God, in writing the Bible, is pretty honest about men and their flaws and deficiencies. And whether it was Abram or David or Moses or Peter or any other person in the Bible, we see the slips and the missteps and the sins. But in Daniel's case, somehow we see a mental strength that was superior. And that's what I want you to notice tonight. Because we go into this year talking about setting an example, and be thou an example. The foundation to being a good example 24/7 starts in the mind. Because every time you have lost it, whether it be in a work setting or in a family setting, or it's simply with your mate, or even in private, you know you first lost the battle here before you lost it here. You didn't act improperly until your mind began to melt down and break down. And how in the world did Daniel keep from having a mental breakdown? Now, we have a generation of softies. Truly, we're defined by our culture. We're defined by our day and age. And listen, as much as we hate to admit it, because now when people used to have to go get water from a well, we go over to a sink. And when people had to go out to collect the eggs and milk the cow, and now we open up the fridge and pull out the eggs and the cart of milk. That's not a bad thing. I'm pretty happy about that. How many of you are happy about that? I'm pretty thankful I don't milk the cow or collect the eggs. Never been big on chickens or cows. So I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying all of those things has helped create a society of people that aren't quite as strong as the previous generations. There was a reason the greatest generation was called the greatest generation. They had some strength. They had some fortitude. They had mental fortitude. And can you imagine Daniel living in the day and age that we're living in? Because in this day and age, everyone's a victim. There was a day when no one was a victim. But in this day and age, everyone. And if you don't consider yourself a victim, all you have to do is sit down with a psychologist for a little while, and he'll go back deep into the dark recesses of your memory and pull out something that'll prove you're a victim. You're a victim, you just haven't realized it yet. Now, we got to go back. What about when you were four? Who chased you? Who bullied you? Who yelled at you? Who wasn't nice to you? Because you're a victim, and you've got to realize that. You need to figure that out real soon. Here is a man, despite everything that he was suffering, that never considered himself a victim. And he kept himself stable in his mind and kept himself from having a breakdown. Insanity demands controlled thinking. If our mind is not controlled, our mouth is not controlled. If our thoughts are not controlled, our actions are not controlled. And until we learn to let go, and ladies, I've said this before in previous messages, it's your very nature to nurture. And a woman will nurture everything. She'll nurture an animal. She'll nurture a child. When that baby or child cries, a man will put another pillow over his head and go back to sleep and say, "You need to just grow up and stop crying. What do you mean your brother knocked your head off? You need to tape it on and wash the blood off your shirt and be a man. Shake it off, walk it off, deal with it. Those things happen in life. I had my head fall off when I was a kid too." But not a woman. If that child is scratched, if that child's frustrated, if that child's had a bad day, mom notices. Dad doesn't notice and dad doesn't care. But mom does. She got to nurture that. And if a bird falls in the backyard and breaks a wing, she got to find a box and bring it. The only problem is you're not only nurturing for good, you're also often by nature nurturing that which is bad. And that hurt, that wound, that feeling, that emotion that has to go away for you to heal is nurtured like a little baby. Pastor, how can this be a watch night service? And how can we start out the year with this as a springboard? Because this is the principle that is the springboard to the future. When we talk about setting a good example, it all starts right here, because when there's a mental collapse, when there's mental stress, when there's mental strain, when there's mental frustration, when we've reached the mental max of our capacity, bad things happen from that point on. And things are said that we often regret, and things that are done we can't undo. And until we learn to, Daniel had lived with a lot of pain from what had taken place in his childhood, but he let it go. He let go of the pain. And some of you are going to have to let go of the pain. You're going to have to let go of the problem. You're going to have to let go of the process. You're going to have to let go of those things in your life that you're holding on to that are not letting you move forward. Because I promise you, you would be shocked by the things that every person in here has had to let go. Young and old, those that were reared in church and those that are new to church. I remember, and it's been quoted here, and some of you wrote it in your Bibles, a message that Dad preached on those things that happened to us. And the little rhyme that was put together, "Don't nurse it, don't rehearse it, don't curse it, give it to God and let him reverse it." How many of you remember that? Now, how many of you do that? We often have a herd and we nurse it and rehearse it and curse it, and we can't let it go. Well, Pastor, I don't think I can let this go. Can you imagine Daniel had he not let it go? You can't be an example. You can't serve as an example. You can't be the right kind of leader. You can't be the right kind of worker. You can't be the right kind of friend. You can't be the right kind of mate. You can't be the right kind of parent. Can you imagine Daniel every day in that palace? Where's Daniel at? He's in his room. What's he doing? He's pretty shook up. What's he shook up about? He's thinking about mom and dad. Now, that'd be natural. He's not coming to breakfast this morning. Why? He's, you know, the trauma that he lived and the people that he saw murdered and all of the evil that was done in his city, he just can't seem to get past it. I think sometimes we read these stories and we don't look at the reality and the practical side and what he had to deal with and understand his trauma was much greater than ours. And here's what Satan wants to do. He wants to get inside your mind. And the Bible tells us in Daniel 7:25. Now this is speaking of the end times. And the Antichrist, but the Antichrist led, possessed, and controlled by Satan has the same satanic purpose. And he shall speak great words against the Most High and shall what? Wear out the saints. That's what Satan wants to do. I know no one here has ever been worn out, not by Satan. I mean to tell you, this crowd is always the top of their game, fired up, passionate, I mean ready to go, and it doesn't matter if it's a 24-hour shift or a 24-minute shift. You can't tell the difference because, no, folks, Satan has a way of wearing out all of us. And you'd think that he would have worn out Daniel. But here's what he had to do. He had to come to the point where he said, okay, I'm going to have to make the adjustments of life according to the need of the day. And here's the best way to have a breakdown. Refuse to adjust. Now, you want to talk about adjustments. If you think your adjustments have been large and extreme and overwhelming, go from Israel to Babylon. Go from God's culture to Satan's culture. Go from Christian parents to no parents at all. He had some deep roots and some solid convictions, which means he had some authority in his life. We don't know who, but an authority in his life that had created accountability, and that accountability was gone. The adjustment of being alone, the adjustment of being lonely, the adjustment of living disappointed, the adjustment of having to learn a new language, the adjustment of being called by a different name, the adjustment of facing 3 years of severe brainwashing, the adjustment of different food. Just the adjustment, if you've ever gone to mission field, if you've ever gone to a foreign country for 10 days, you are ready after 10 days to reverse that adjustment and come back to your own culture and your own family and your own church. How many of you ever been on a vacation after 10 days you were done? And that was a vacation. That was a place you chose and food you cooked, the place you wanted to be. And here's Daniel in the midst of all these adjustments. And if in our minds we refuse to make those adjustments, there will be a breakdown. And when that mental breakdown takes place, ugly things happen. All of life, you don't have to do anything special. Marriage is an adjustment. And having children is an adjustment. Having your first child is a huge adjustment. Having your second child is another adjustment. Your third child and your fourth child. But being an example is setting a standard. And here's what Daniel did. He said, okay, society's not going to set my standard. My friends aren't going to set my standard. If you're going to be an example, you have to say, I'm going to set the standard. Babylon doesn't set the standard. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't set the standard. And we talk about setting a standard. You know the end of this chapter when he requested a different diet. And they came and took a look at these young men. And verse 19 says, they found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And in all matters of wisdom, understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them, what? 10 times better. That's setting the example. We're not talking about 10 times better than the hobos on the corner. The average citizens, we're talking about 10 times better than the hand-picked men chosen by the king. That's excellence. That's setting the example. Look what it says in 1 of verse 4 about these young men. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored, skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge, understanding science and such as, look what it says, young people, this is important, had ability in them to stand in the king's palace. and whom they might teach. You know what they wanted? They wanted young men that were already prepared. These were 14, 15, and 16-year-olds. He wasn't looking for college graduates. He said, I want young men that are already prepared to stand in the palace. Daniel's setting the example. And the example is noticed by the king in the man that he's the servant that he sends out to choose these young men. He said, I want you to pick people that have set the standard, that live the standard, that are the example. It's amazing to me in the independent fundamental Baptist movement among Christians how low we've set the bar. And because everyone has a complaint, we keep lowering the standard. Doesn't matter if it's academic standards or dress standards. We have to keep lowering and lowering because someone complains and someone's upset. My kids are pushed too hard. Too much is required. Too much is asked of them. Listen, there's never been a time in the history of this church that we've asked less, because every year we have to lower the bar to accommodate the unwillingness to invest in pulling our children up instead of letting them be average. Do you realize average isn't sufficient in this society? There has to be preparation. And when they're looking for people with the ability to stand before king, they chose this man in order to set the example. You can't have a mental breakdown. So parents had put a little bit of stress on this young man. You don't just come out of the womb ready to stand in the palace. You just don't at 3 years old have the right posture, and at 6 years old, the proper pronunciation, and at 10 years old, sufficient intelligence. This young man had someone applying pressure to him, and he had learned to grow and adjust. God's not sitting in heaven saying, I wonder how I can get someone to have a mental collapse. But if we're honest tonight, I don't know if there's a single person here that can say, I've lived my whole life without a mental meltdown. It may have been a moment, maybe it's just 15 minutes or 30 minutes. I hope it wasn't very prolonged. I hope it wasn't days or weeks or months. You're going to have to go to an institution. But we're talking about a breakdown that ice cream won't solve, and a hug won't resolve, and that a vacation isn't going to end. We're talking about mental stress, knowing because of my circumstance, because everything that's going on around me, I can't take any more. I think I'm going to break. This man had every excuse that we have and more. But he was adjusting as the circumstance demanded. He was prepared and going through the process. He was embracing the process, because look what it says. After all that he had learned, at 16 or 17, how many 16 or 17-year-olds are capable and qualified of standing in the palace? Hold on. The king said, pick those men that we might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them, what? 3 years. Life is about a process. Young people, let me tell you a secret tonight that's going to help you. You can't have a great life and live hating the process. Here's why so many people live their lives frustrated. Because if your life is about the payday, if you live for the payday, you're happy for 30 minutes every 2 weeks. If you're living for Christmas, you're happy one time, one day, every year. If you are happy in living for vacation, listen, I know people that live for their vacation. They work all year and they save up everything for 10 days, so they got a span of happiness that lasts all of 10 days. But the process is hated. Kids, you better learn those 13 years in school are part of the process. You better embrace that. And then more education in college, in Bible college. And then when you get out in your job and you're going through another process, if you don't love the process, you're never going to be successful in life. I love all the work leading up to the missions conference as much as I love the missions conference. You say, how can I? I don't differentiate between one day and enjoy a singular moment, oh boy, I'd be a miserable person. I want to enjoy every day. I want to enjoy every responsibility. I want to enjoy and embrace the process of life, and that's with child rearing. I'm not waiting for a moment when they actually behave, put a smile on my face, or make me feel proud as a father. I'm going to embrace the process of rearing this child from day one until death. I'm not going to wait for a special day in our church, a special conference, or the couples retreat, or the Bible conference in March. Folks, I can't live that way. And if you find more joy in the reward that the process brings than the process itself, most of your life is going to be a disappointment that'll lead you to have a mental breakdown. And you want to know why we have a world of frustrated people? Because life is difficult. And they're not embracing the process. They're embracing the reward of the process, which is very rare. Once every 2 weeks, or once a month, or once a year. So their joy is based on their day of graduation, but that only lasts for 4 hours. So the joy is short-lived. Listen, we all ought to be setting the example, and that's impossible if we're having a mental breakdown. And this world has set us up to have a mental breakdown. How many realize just the change of diet, the lack of exercise, we're unhealthy, and unhealthiness produces chemicals in the body that don't allow us to think clearly. We're worn out, living on edge, frustrated, tired. Number two means avoiding brainwashing. You know how many people I've seen lose their sanity because they're brainwashed? You know what this world wants to? Brainwash you. So here's what the king said. It goes from bad to worse because they're brought in from captivity, living there in Babylon. But the king decides to be a little bit what I would say is benevolent brainwashing. Because he's saying, I'm going to offer a 3-year college scholarship and pay for your food, your housing, you live in the palace. He's handpicking the future movers and shakers of the nation. Because he wants them to share philosophy and a new identity and his tastes and his language. Folks, that hasn't changed. We're talking about the land of Shinar. You go back to the Tower of Babel. You know what we're talking about here. This has always been Satan's seat. You know what Satan wants? The minds. He may have lost the soul of the Christian, but he wants to gain their mind. And he's being very successful doing this through the constant barrage that comes through anything from media to higher learning to public education. And this new king said, I'm going to produce and program the movers and shakers of this land to think exactly the way I think. And here's what we have. A generation of Christians that's fallen into the trap of being brainwashed. And here's how he did it. He could come in and sit these men down in a class and say, now, really, you're coming from a land of losers. You know what your faith is? It's making you a loser. I mean, we came in, we plundered your temple. We stole your holy vessels. We slaughtered your people. We won. You're in captivity. You're a bunch of losers. Now, either your God didn't hear you, he wasn't listening, or he didn't want to help you. I think he was trying to whisper in their ear, Marduk and Nebo are greater than Jehovah. And here's what the world wants to do. The world wants to convince you that you're a loser. Because what you believe and what you do, the church you attend, and here's, we've got to eliminate your distinctive behavior so that you fit in with society. And if you've seen everything that's going on around the world and you understand there are new problems and new persecutions coming, I mean to tell you, half-hearted Christians in this generation are going to crumble. secondhand faith is not going to endure. And Satan is so subtle. He's already done it to dozens and dozens of churches. Brainwashed them. The music doesn't matter. Holiness doesn't matter. Standards doesn't matter. Godly living doesn't matter. Our churches have become clubs. Folks, we're outcasts among our own. We haven't changed. They have changed. Well, you got to keep up with society. I want to keep up with society? That's what Nebuchadnezzar told these boys. You need to keep up with society. I have you in the palace. You're going to have to be a little more preppy. He's telling the girls, you got to lift those skirts a little. I'm talking about top of the knee. You got to be stylish. It's got to be tighter. Young men, get rid of the suit. Get rid of the tie. Drums on the platform make you relevant. How are you going to keep a crowd if your music is still based on the old hymns of the faith? Have you lost your mind? That's not relevant. You got to wake up. How are you going to grow a congregation on that? You got to be hip, so bring in some hop. Make it happen. Come forward into a new generation. Look at our church grow. Look at our musicians. You need to plug in those guitars. You need to get someone that's a little less antiquated than Pastor Robert. Get someone with a little bit of sway in their hips, a little bit of rhythm in their soul. The lie is subtle, and there are many that are falling for it. The bottom line is, and we know in the book of Daniel, because it mentions these four by name. And when that statue was put up and the music was played, these are the only ones that didn't bow. Obviously, many Christians have an identity of being a Christian, but a heathen heart is what God sees. There's so much to be taught here, and we're going to take weeks to do it. But if you go back and you read the book of Jeremiah that was prophesying the captivity of Judah, which Daniel had to live and experience, he said one of the biggest problems of this generation. Matter of fact, go back there and look at the text with me. Jeremiah 6:15. He said they had lost their blush. Jeremiah 6:15. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed. Neither could they blush. How many of you realize we live in a generation that doesn't know how to blush? What kids can say and no one blushes. What people see, conversation, I'm not talking about in the world, but in the church. We have lost our blush. And there was a young man who said, I have purposed in my heart not to defile myself. And here's where you keep your mind stable and you keep yourself from having a breakdown and you keep yourself from the brainwashing that has taken place. You've got to purpose in your heart that you're going to live on purpose. Otherwise, Satan's going to play with your mind every single day of your life. Young men, if you don't determine, I'm not going to be brainwashed by what's taking place around me. Not going to happen. I got a book. I know the truth. I have a faith that is not negotiable. Now, how do you maintain a faith that's not negotiable? You're going to have to be willing to pay any price that comes with that faith. Now, if we abandon our faith for no consequence at all, simply for a reward, do you think that we won't abandon our faith in a time of persecution? If we can't be faithful to church with all the pluses that there are in a congregation like this, how will we be faithful when there's actually a little bit of persecution? Daniel had a faith that was not negotiable, and I know it looks like in this text when he requested of the prince of the eunuchs, but he had already made up his mind, purpose in his heart, that he would not defile himself. And we see that in chapter 3 when the three Hebrew children would not bow, and they said, listen, our God's able, he's well able to deliver us. But if not, that doesn't change a thing because our faith is not negotiable. And in Daniel 6, chapter 10, when they put out the decree that if you pray, you're going to be thrown in a fiery furnace, and he opened up the windows of his house, and he knelt down on his knees in full view of the city and said, I want you boys to know I'm praying today, morning, noon, and night, just so you know I'm not going to my closet. His faith was not negotiable. You know what that means? The only way we're going to stand such a test is if we value what we have more than what we can lose. Oh, hold on for a minute. You're going to get that in just a second. Here's why American Christianity is in trouble. There was a day when people go off to war, but they only had 800 square feet and a dirt floor and a broken down couch and a horse that they used to travel on. But we have a lot more to lose today than any other generation of Christians. Retirement account and houses and cars and trinkets and treasures. Daniel said, my faith is of greater value than any other earthly possession. So you can take away all of that, including my freedom and my health. That doesn't change the fact that my faith is superior. And I will not exchange my faith for anything that I have that is earthly in nature. Now, if you get that truth alone tonight, it'll change your life. Because our faith today and the faith of the average young person, the average church, is negotiable. What do I have to gain? What do I have to lose? No, I'm not trading my faith for anything. I'm not trading it for freedom. I'm not trading it for wealth. I'm not trading it for financial gain. I'm not trading my faith. Now, other Christians in other nations have had to make that decision. We as Americans have not had to yet make that decision, but I fear for Americans because we have much more to lose than the rest of the world. We're only going to stand the test, be faithful, when we're confident in the truth, and that we have the truth. This is why it's so important that your kids understand this is the Word of God. We have the truth. This world doesn't have the truth. They attack the truth, but they don't have the truth. Here's what will keep your mind stable. I have the truth, and I'm standing upon. You don't have the truth. You can come to me with a better argument. You can win a debate. That doesn't change the fact that this is truth. It's non-negotiable. And then you got to know, if you're going to stand this test, that God is in absolute control, although at times it looks like that's not the case. Wouldn't you think that it crossed through Daniel's mind a couple times that possibly God had lost control? I mean, the temple was destroyed and the holy vessels were taken out of the temple by Nebuchadnezzar and brought to his pagan gods and to his palace. Doesn't it seem like the score is Nebuchadnezzar 1 and God 0? Humanly speaking, it looks like that. But here's what stability of mind means. You got to avoid the breakdown. You got to avoid the brainwashing. And then number 3, you're going to have to avoid the burnout. How many noticed reading the book of Daniel? There's Nebuchadnezzar. There's Belshazzar. There's Darius. There's Cyrus. If you work in one palace under one regime, one president, one king, that's quite the accomplishment. But for longevity like that's unheard of. And he wasn't born with a golden spoon in his mouth. We're talking about someone that worked hard and worked hard for a long time and didn't go through the instability, the mental instability of a burnout. Now, I've already preached a long time tonight and worn you guys out. I don't want to take Satan's job because that's his job to wear you out. If you've withstood the mental breakdown, and if you've withstood the mental brainwashing, be careful. Because Satan's going to try to come and play with your mind through burnout. And I'm worn out, and I've sacrificed, and I've given, and others have given less, and others have sacrificed less, and others have more. And because we equate everything to the financial side of life, because this one has better finances and better retirement, surely God's blessing is over him and not over me. Be careful. How do you deal with what Daniel dealt with for 80 years and not burn out? You read the book of Daniel. from the very beginning when Nebuchadnezzar says, I'm going to slay all my wizards and magicians and wise men unless they tell me not only the meaning of this dream, but what I dreamed. Now, that's pretty wild. I want you guys to tell me what I dreamed last night and then give me the meaning of what I dreamed. And they all panicked and said, I'm just going to commit suicide now. Feed me some of those wild boysenberries. Let's hope that does the trick, because I don't want to suffer at the hands of this king, death. And Daniel said, no. Let's get in touch with God. You know, the only way to consistently deal with stress, and I know this is totally a topic for another day and another message, and there's a million reasons for burnout, and whether that's doing too much or the inability to delegate or not properly addressing stress. I know. I'm not trying to minimize those things. You guys are intelligent enough to realize all that. Bottom line is, Zechariah, you remember Zechariah 4:6, Zerubbabel and the rebuilding of the temple and then the rebuilding of the wall, all the projects and how long that took. And in all that, he said, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. The only way you're not going to experience spiritual burnout is to live every day allowing the Holy Spirit take that burden, take that load, do the work, trust in Him, receive His comfort. You know, too much of the Bible, we've heard it for so long, we actually look at the Bible as a big cliche. Operating in the Holy Spirit is not a cliche. If you don't do it, you will experience burnout. Now, here's the conclusion. How many of you here say, preacher, I would like to set the example in my home, in my ministry, in my church. I want to be able to say that I have fulfilled that command spoken by Paul to Timothy to be an example. That's my desire. I want to be an example. Everybody here have that desire? The majority. The way to lose that battle is to lose your mind. The way to win that battle is to keep your mind. And we are going to have to avoid the breakdown and avoid the brainwashing and avoid the burnout. Daniel set an amazing example, saying, I'm living on purpose with purpose, not allowing my mind 2 inches of leeway, because 2 inches means breakdown. And there stood Daniel in the midst of all the chaos, faithful and true, saying, I will be an example.
The Capital City Baptist Church is located at 1300 Red Street in beautiful Austin, Texas. We'd invite you to join us if you're in town. 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, 6 p.m. Sunday night, and 7:30 each and every Wednesday evening. Our phone number is 512-447-9454, but I'd like to point your attention specifically to our website, capitalcitybaptist.org. There you'll find information regarding service times, the staff, and all about Capital City Baptist Church. Additionally, you can find an archive of previously preached messages there for you to download, enjoy, and pass on to friends and family. Again, that website is capitalcitybaptist.org. That's capital with an O, citybaptist.org. Be sure and tell a friend and do your best to join us again for Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of the Capital City Baptist Church.